Keith, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Patrick.
Yeah, no worries. Look, kind of interesting story, and I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here. So we're a very young podcast, so this is only episode number 10. Historically, we've only had Client Boost guests on, so you are the first non-Client Boost guest. So kind of a historic moment for the podcast. No pressure.
God, all right. The gauntlet has been thrown down. Yeah, thanks, Patrick. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's it. You're setting the bar, dude. Anyways, before we get into the meat of today's topic, why don't you just quickly let everybody know who you are and what you do?
Sure. My name is Keith Delaney. I'm one of the co-founders and the CEO of a company called Primer, sayprimer.com. And we're trying to solve the problem of B2B targeting on B2C channels. Helping those great B2B products get discovered, which these days seems harder than ever.
Got the right ingredients for revenue growth? A pinch of effort and a dash of hope won't cut it anymore. Grab your utensils. You're about to get some high-performing marketing recipes. Welcome to Client Boost Kitchen.
Yeah, I love that. And it's I like that the B2B is finally moving to a place where there's appetite for those B2C channels as well. Because I think for me, you know, historically people say, oh, you know, B2B decision makers, they're not on Facebook. And you're like, there's like how many billion people on Facebook now? Are you sure that your decision makers aren't on there?
My wife is a B2B decision maker and she doom scrolls every night on Instagram.
I love that. Well, so today we are going to be covering the topic of why you should stop wasting money on low quality traffic and what you can do instead. So there's really going to be three core takeaways for you guys. First one is going to be why your paid ads CAC is suddenly skyrocketing and what you can do to fix it. We're also going to be giving you six playbooks you can implement to drive down CAC and win more customers. And then finally, we are going to show you how you can use paid ads to also accelerate deals, not just generate opportunities. So with that, let's get into the meat of the podcast here, which is number one, why is your CAC skyrocketing? So I know for me, I've worked in B2B for about 6 years now, and CAC has always been a part of the conversation, but I would say very much so over the last 12 months. It just feel like it's more front of mind for marketing leaders, but also it does seem to be disproportionately increasing as well. So Keith, I know you have a pretty strong POV on that. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, we had to have a strong POV to get investors to give us money. And the reality is, you know, things are changing sort of structurally for marketing. And that's always the case, right? That's kind of the beauty and the pain of being a marketer is nothing ever stays constant. And what's happening, right, is one, we're kind of at the peak of this industrial revolution, right? Where there's just so many software startups exploding. Mm-hmm. There's so many companies. It's so easy to create a D2C brand, you know, if you're in that space. But what that means is there's more competition, which means, you know, there's more people bidding for those eyeballs in the ad auctions. At the same time, you've got, rightly so, privacy constraints affecting both ad targeting and attribution. You know, pixel blockers, the 7-day throw out of cookies in Safari, right? Every 7 days, they just flush all the cookies. And that makes it hard for these ad networks to build their identity graph because a lot of it is cookie-based. It also makes it really hard for these analytics tools to actually track the end-to-end number of sessions. And as we know, as B2B marketers, you know, being able to, you know, these deal cycles aren't just like a last click conversion. There's a lot of touch points that lead up to somebody actually, you know, form submitting and turning into an opportunity. And then, you know, a lot of teams just turn to outbound and the inboxes are just getting flooded. And again, rightly so, you know, Outlook and Gmail and all the major email service providers are just, cracking down on the thresholds. So you're playing kind of cat and mouse with their algorithms to get delivery, let alone to get your email, opened and read and replied to. All of that is sort of this like perfect storm. But what I like to think about, and I've learned this from a lot of the great marketers I've worked with, is that, one man's challenge is another man's opportunity. Because if you can think about, there's all these channels that people are trying to hammer or do things the same old way. If you can come up with a different approach, that can help you break through the noise, and that can help you really unlock efficiencies that your competition certainly isn't leveraging.
Yeah, I love that. And I think in the age of AI, it really does feel like playbooks to some degree have become, I know we're going to give away some playbooks today, but have sort of been commoditized, right? So it's the people that can adapt the quickest to the overused playbooks are going to be the ones that win. I'm going to go on a slight tangent here because I want to get your POV on another thing, because as you were talking there, it just triggered it for me. This is a POV of mine. Lots of people think that platforms like Meta, like Google, like LinkedIn are over-reporting on the number of conversions that they drive in. My POV is that they're under-reporting. I actually think they're not showing you nearly as much value as you're getting from them. What's your take?
That's absolutely true for B2B, right? Mm-hmm. Because the seven, most of these, especially Google, LinkedIn, LinkedIn, if anybody from LinkedIn is listening to this, thank you for letting us into your marketing partner program. Really appreciate you. But man, your platform needs some love. Like, you just invest in it. Meta and Google, though, right? They only do 7-day attribution windows. So of course they're underreporting. They literally can't report for like a 30-day first ad to conversion. That's not feasible for them. And that's likely what's happening for a lot of B2B marketers. So their influence on first touch is drastically underreported, which means the number of conversions that they're reporting in their platform is really low.
I agree with you.
Yeah, 7-day conversion window for B2B is insane. So I know that LinkedIn just rolled out 365-day conversion windows, and I immediately set every single conversion we have to 365 days, because I was like, I know we use this platform Dream Data to analyze deals, and I actually just completed this exercise for all of the closed won deals we had in Q1, and I would say maybe probably somewhere between 50 and 80% of them, the first touch point was either a LinkedIn ad impression or a LinkedIn ad click, maybe 2 years ago in some instances, as far back as 2 years ago. Your attribution windows aren't catching that, right?
No. Yeah. And then, I could go off about this, but what that means also is that it's really hard to trust the Meta and Google algorithms to appropriately optimize towards conversions. They inherently don't have the data they need, and that's something we could talk about. But it means that your job as a B2B marketer is harder to work within those platforms, because you have to figure out how to optimize it yourself.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Which is tough, but I guess we'll get on to how people can do that as we go through this. So I think one of the next points I had in mind for us to talk about was this idea that the 2010s era playbook is broken. So I think this kind of reminds me of the old days of, going on to HubSpot. They've got all of the nurture sequences that you should follow, exact retargeting sequences that you should do. And if you just follow this step by step, suddenly you get a 10x revenue in 30 days. And while that playbook was effective maybe 10 years ago, it really isn't anymore. So yeah, what's your thoughts on that?
I couldn't agree more. It's the sort of the law of shitty click-throughs. Every tactic, once everybody starts doing it, diminishes in returns because people get, immune to it. Nobody clicks on a banner ad anymore. Sorry, Google Display. And that's kind of like what's this same old playbook is a little tired, pixel-based retargeting, all those retargeting audiences have shrunk because of ask app not to track on mobile, and then also, you know, restrictions in the browser around cookies, that also impacts the algorithms themselves, you know, that they're not collecting as much data to help with better targeting and better delivery. It's affecting tools like GA, but it's also, I mean, Dream Data is a really cool platform. Hockey Stack's a really cool platform. Factors is a really cool platform, but they're also encounter issues with being able to track, you know, those full journeys. You know, they're finding ways to work around it, but that's harder. You know, it used to be a lot easier. That's why these companies have the opportunity to exist now, is because the job is harder. GA is not doing it for us anymore. And then, you know, you've got this cold outbound playbook is, again, harder too. It's just all these technological constraints that basically mean you have to come up with new plays.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned there about GA not being up to scratch anymore. I think I would love to see the stats on how, like, usage has dropped for GA, not only because it's harder to even just send the right data to it now, but that platform is so ludicrously overcomplicated to use as well.
Totally. Yeah.
Cool. With that, so we've kind of got like a pretty good overview of what the problem is here. So in terms of best ways to actually overcome this, I know that there's lots of cool features in Primer to be able to do that, because we're actively experimenting a lot of them, you know, with a lot of them ourselves at Client Boost as well. But let's take this from just kind of like a platform by platform level. So starting with Google Ads, and I would say Google Ads specifically is probably the area where I'm hearing the most amount of resentment from marketers, because it feels like CAC keeps going up, lead quality keeps going down.
I think it's falling victim to saturation, right? Google Ads is the highest intent thing, so people think it's, you know, it's where they should invest first and foremost, because it's easiest to track, right? It's closest to that actual purchase or form submit behavior, because, you know, somebody's actively researching something, right? So you can actually measure the impact. And a lot of that traffic is also still desktop, which helps with measuring the impact. If you can measure it, you can prove it, right? And then you can invest, and then you can make the argument to invest in it. So that's why I think Google's CPCs are rising, is because everybody's like, it's easy to measure, therefore I should do it, right? And that's just leading to more and more competition. Sort of the same dynamics happening in LinkedIn, I think, with CPMs going up so much, because LinkedIn claims that 40% of their traffic is still desktop, and it's a lot easier to measure. It's a lot easier to get desktop conversions in B2B than it is to get mobile conversions in B2B. That's kind of the problem, I think, that's creating these rising CPCs, rising CAC. How to mitigate it is really the big question. And I love some of the content that you put out there, Patrick, about this, about, you know, focusing your search strategy around keywords and just getting more disciplined about it. Another approach that people don't always think about is using suppression audiences or inclusion audiences to also focus your budget inside search.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. And you sent some. We're already seeing a definite decrease in the number of, I would say, spam leads on our side since implementing suppression audiences. It's also been really, really good for us, because one thing we were struggling with is, you know, this is more on the LinkedIn side than the Google side, but is just agencies coming to the website and agencies wasting all of our clicks and spend. It's helped with that immensely. But I can see here just some stats. So recent case study for you guys without that in place, cost per op was something like 1.1K. Adding those suppression audiences into a non-brand campaign got that cost per op down to 725. So it's a huge, huge decrease.
Yeah. It was really effective. I mean, the way it works, and it's very common for B2C brands to create suppression audiences, right? Because it's easy, because they have, you know, that personal email, and that personal email is what drives a lot of the match rate. There's other factors too, but it helps. With Primer, you can build an audience of B2B decision makers, but then we have an identity graph going on that helps us you know, if you were to take those work emails and import them to Google of those B2B decision makers, you'd get a 2% match rate. With Primer, we're able to get that up between 15 and 45%. And that can be, that means that you can immediately shut off about half of those bad impressions. Mm-hmm. And that you can imagine the impact that has.
Yeah, it's huge. And it's not just limited to search either, right? So you're using this across the whole scope of Google campaigns, right?
Yeah, that's right. So YouTube's another one where I think a lot of ABM focused teams are oriented. We can push those audiences into YouTube awareness campaigns, right? You're not always going to see a ton of last click conversions from those, but you can look at the traffic that's visiting your website, you know, using reverse IP and see if you're actually driving more of those high fin accounts versus just starting to use Google's custom audiences or something like that. PMax is a big one as well. You know, I think a lot of marketers write off performance max campaigns in Google. They try it once and they see a ton of junk leads coming through. And that's because you're letting the Google algorithm just kind of randomly pick who to serve the ad to. And then they're trying to optimize over time, over volume of conversions. But what happens is the people that are most likely to convert and form submit on your website are the crappy people, you know, the people you don't want. And then Google just keeps optimizing for more of those. So you have to override their targeting algorithm. And they give you the ability to do that by adding an audience as a signal inside of a PMax asset group. And that when we've seen that when you do that, it can transform PMax campaigns. You're still going to get some unqualified form submits, but the CPMs are so low that the ROAS will pencil because you'll actually be driving good fit people, and it's really effective.
Yeah, I'm glad you talked about this because I am guilty. I'm that person where I'm like, tried PMax, didn't work. I then tried it again. And I tried it with changing the conversion action and it still didn't work. So for sure, I'm going to give that one a go. So lots of cool stuff that you can do in Google, but obviously Primer's not just restricted to Google, right? So I think another great use case for you guys is kind of like the Meta/Instagram lead gen, but doing it in a way where you actually get decent quality leads.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of B2B brands that can make Meta work with lookalike audiences and even in some cases with Meta's native targeting. But I would say there's many more. The vast majority struggle and they probably only use Meta for retargeting.
I was going to say, because I think this is important for the audience to understand. Would you say that the businesses that can make Meta work, is it usually maybe lower product, like initial product cost? Maybe they're a freemium model, so that they're more getting measured against those PQLs, for example, as opposed to maybe the, you know, an SQL for a 10K a month product, a PQL for a 20K a month, $20 a month product. It's a lot easier because there's higher volume, easier for Facebook to actually do what it needs to do.
It's a combination of that and just having a really, really big addressable market that you're trying to serve. So if you have a, you know, if you could serve almost anybody under the sun, but you know, like a car dealership is a great example of that, right? It's a high ticket purchase item, relatively speaking, you know, 20 to 30, 40 grand a year, but there's a lot of people that are shopping for cars. Similarly for like things like HR payroll software, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people shopping for that. So you can kind of make, you could make Meta work with native targeting in that respect. But most companies, I would say, struggle with this. You know, either their market's too small or, per your point, right, their target CPL is too high. You know, like these deals are really meaty. So the way that Primer works is we can, again, sort of jack up those match rates on the platforms on Meta. You can go from, you know, a 10% match rate if you upload a list of work emails to more like a 40 to 60% match rate. And then all of a sudden your ads are only hitting people that are pre-qualified. And that's kind of like it's essentially like what you are doing on LinkedIn. And whether you're using us or metadata for that or somebody else, it can be a really effective strategy, so long as you are aware that Meta is heavily mobile. So you really have to optimize your conversion and your tracking for that mobile experience. And that can be tricky for folks.
Yeah, I would agree. And I know from having conversations with a lot of the kind of platform specialists at Client Boost, the main POV for us internally is tracking is like make or break for performance marketing right now. I think it is the case that it kind of always has been, but just especially so now with it, A, just being so much harder to track, and B, actually needing that data fed back into those systems to make them work properly.
Right. You got to be sending the signal. Yeah. The other thing that I will say is a lot of analytics tools, even to some extent, Meta, but and Google, but I'll leave them to the side for a second. A lot of traditional touch-based analytic tools, they can't bridge that mobile desktop divide, right? The two devices. So I might see an ad on Instagram. I might even click and read a blog post or watch a video, but then I'm going to go and search for the company on my desktop, on my laptop later on to actually sign up for the free trial or fill out or request a demo. And that, your hockey stacks, your dream data, like nobody can bridge that. Google can't do that really well anymore. They used to kind of be able to do it. So the technological constraints really mess up your attribution. That's why I'm going to do another shameless plug for Primer. That's why we're building in holdout groups into your audience. So you could basically say, hey, these people within the audience did not see your ads, right? On mobile, they didn't see your ads anywhere. These people were exposed to your ads. What are the conversion rates between the two groups? And what you'll notice is those people who are seeing your ads on heavily mobile channels like Instagram, they're converting at a higher rate. And you can tie that back to a ROAS number, an incremental lift number. And it can be a really powerful way to go to your CFO, go to your CEO and say, look, this is working. Let's continue to invest in this.
Yeah, I love that. And I think we could have a whole separate podcast on the CFO conversation. I actually think JD is working on a whole separate podcast on how to have conversations with the CFO. But I definitely just want to shout out that conversion lift tool that you've been working on as well. So for us, we've been using Primer exclusively for ad targeting on LinkedIn, Google Ads since about December last year. And so in our May priority audience right now, we're seeing something like a 9x increase in conversions for users who've seen an ad versus didn't see an ad, which is absolutely insane. And like you say, it gives you a very, very strong case to present to CFO, because that's hard data to argue with.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, we've talked a lot about acquisition, but I know that acquisition isn't the only thing that you can use this kind of third-party target for as well. There's also a whole separate use case on deal acceleration. And for me, this is a strong POV that I have, which is, you know, I just worked with so many companies where as soon as somebody gets handed over to sales, they want them taken out of targeting because they don't want to waste money on somebody that they're already in conversation with. I have like the total opposite approach where I'm like, if I have 1K to spend on ads, the only people I'm going to be targeting are the people in pipeline, because they are not won until they've signed the contract, right? And there is absolutely no downsides to keep reminding them again and again why they should choose your product. So let's talk a little bit about ways that we can accelerate deals as well with paid ads.
Yeah. So I think, you see companies, I think, trying to do this a little more manually on platforms like LinkedIn right now, right? Mm-hmm. They'll export a list of accounts that maybe or people that signed up for a demo, and then they'll import it as a matched audience into LinkedIn, and they'll try to run ads to push them down funnel. With Primer, you can hook up your CRM, and then we basically will pull that data in from your CRM, construct the audience and primer, and sync it out to all these different ad platforms. So you can create audiences by any funnel stage you want. People who signed up for a webinar or downloaded an ebook but haven't booked a demo, you're going to want to run more consideration level content towards them. People who've converted into an opportunity, you've got one champion at that company. How do you build influence with finance, procurement, legal? Well, let's run ads to them. Let's build some brand awareness, some familiarity. It's like, oh yeah, we've seen Client Boost's name everywhere. Of course we should work with them as our agency. Yeah. That it's intuitive to some extent, but people don't always think of it as a strategy that they should employ and run. And another reason why they don't is they have a hard time saying, okay, well, marketing helped with this, right? We should throw more money at this. We can prove it. And then they're like, well, how can you prove it, right? Sales is the one who is actually, moving the deal forward. Again, this is where conversion lift helps, because if you have a holdout group built into your audience, you can basically track these two cohorts. People who didn't see ads, see what their conversion rates and progression through the funnel are. People who did get to see ads, see what those opportunity and demo and lead forms, progression rates through the funnel are. User Gems did this on their own. They kind of set up a workflow in Salesforce to stamp different opportunities, and they saw crazy increases in down funnel acceleration when they actually supported them with sort of air cover.
Yeah, for sure. I can absolutely believe that. I think, I've seen some data recently. I think it was maybe from Peplaha or something like that, where I think the statistics were like 80%. There's like an 80% higher likelihood of a deal to close if the people in the buy-in committee. I may have totally butchered this, so if I have, somebody let me know so that I can correct myself. But something like that, 80% higher likelihood that you're going to close the deal if there's that brand awareness in the buy-in committee, which is insane, insane numbers.
I believe it. I mean, we've seen it reflected, we've seen 31% win rate increases with one of our customers as a result of running this play. We've seen increase in deal size too, which is awesome, right? By extending, getting more, one way you could do that is when you think about I only need, five seats, for example. Oh, wait, other people come in. Other people have been hearing about, your tool. All of a sudden that deal size goes up to 30 seats, something like that.
Yeah, that's wild. That's going to be music, I think, to a lot of people's ears, for sure. With that, that's kind of everything that we had down to cover today. So I just want to get the listeners a few tactical takeaways. So I'm going to go with what I think are the top ones for me. And then Keith, feel free to chime in with anything else that you think we may have missed. But I think one for me is there's definitely kind of an increase in low quality ad inventory / those dated playbooks are not working anymore, which is driving up CAC. And so really precision third-party targeting is the answer, both from the use case of using it for inclusion audiences, where you're actually building the audiences in that platform and sending it to platforms, but also using it to suppress the people that you don't want to see ad, which again is just going to help eliminate wasted spend. Other one for me is definite use case for Meta is third-party audiences to deliver lower cost and qualified leads just due to the cheaper CPMs. And again, fewer B2Bs are advertising on Meta. So I think it's probably pretty safe to say that those CPMs will probably stay low indefinitely as well. And then final one for me is just for marketers not to think of paid ads as entirely for lead gen. So the right strategy can absolutely accelerate deals, increase close rates, and it sounds like, Keith, as well, increase AOVs, which is all good stuff that I think is going to empower a lot of marketers.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a ton of opportunity right now for people who are willing to think a little differently. You know, whenever I see people, everybody doing the same thing, I start thinking, all right, that means nobody's doing this thing over here. That's where the value is. So, you know, between all of these recipes that you guys keep coming up with, Client Boost, and between new tools emerging, there's a lot of opportunity if you're willing to be a bit bold.
100%, man. Couldn't agree more. Look, we'll wrap it up there. I appreciate you joining us today. Thanks a lot, dude.
Yeah. Thanks, Patrick. Really appreciate you having me. I think the bar is low for your next outside guest. we'll likely surpass it, but I really appreciate the opportunity and, you know, look forward to supporting you guys on and on.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Have a good one.